Yeah, Buddha said that if you are forgetful, if you are not fully aware, you cannot practice mindfulness meditation, mindfulness of breathing meditation. But the commentator said here, although any meditation subject, no matter what, is successful only in one who is mindful and fully aware, yet any meditation subject other than this one gets more evident as he goes on giving it his attention. But this mindfulness of breathing is difficult to develop, a field in which only the minds of Buddhas, Pachika Buddhas and Buddhas' sons are at home. It is no trivial matter, nor can it be cultured by trivial persons. In proportion as continued attention is given to it, it becomes more peaceful and more subtle. So strong mindfulness and understanding are necessary here. So stronger mindfulness and understanding are necessary in the practice of mindfulness of breathing meditation and then in the practice of other kinds of meditation. Just as when doing needlework on a piece of fine cloth, a fine needle is needed, and a still finer instrument for boring the needle's eye, so too when developing this meditation subject, which resembles fine cloth, both the mindfulness, which is the counterpart of the needle, and the understanding associated with it, which is the counterpart of the instrument for boring the needle's eye, need to be strong. A bhikkhu must have the necessary mindfulness and understanding and must look for the in-breath and out-breath nowhere else than the place normally touched by them. So just by keeping the mind at the place where they touched before, he waited for the breathing to become evident again. And then there's a simile of a plowman. Let us skip that. And on the next page, page 307, when he does so in this way, the sign soon appears. So he perseveres in keeping his mind at the tip of the nose, and so the breathing becomes evident to him again. Then he dwells on that sign or that breathing continuously, and so soon appears to him the sign. The sign of different kinds, but it is not the same for all. So the sign appears not as the same for all. So to one person it may one kind of sign will appear, and to another it may be another. So there is not one sign but many forms of signs. On the contrary, some say that when it appears, it does so to certain people, producing a light touch like cotton or silk cotton or drought. Yeah. But this is the exposition given in the commentaries. It appears to some like a star or cluster of gems or a cluster of pearls, to others like a rough touch like that of a silk cotton seed or a peck made of hard wood. So that is what some meditators feel. See, they thought something was put into their nose, in the nostrils, maybe even difficult to breathe. To others, like a long braid string or a wreath of flowers or a puff of smoke. To others, like a stretched out cobweb or a film of cloud or a lotus flower or a chariot wheel or a moon's disc or the sun's disc. So any kind of sign can appear to a person. When my father meditated, practiced this meditation, he said he saw the sign like a sheet of silver. So any one of those mentioned here, or even those that are not mentioned here, may appear to a meditator. So anything can appear as the sign of this meditation. In fact, this resembles an occasion when a number of bhikkhus are sitting together reciting a sutta. When a bhikkhu asks, "What does this sutta appear like to you?" One says, it appears to me like a great mountain torrent. Another, "To me it is like a line of forest trees," and then so on and so on. So, depending on different persons, there can be multiplicity of and many varieties of these signs. Similarly, this single meditation subject appears differently because of difference in perception. It is born of perception, it sources perception, it is produced by perception. Therefore, it should be understood that when it appears differently, it is because of difference in perception. People have different outlooks or different notions, and so they appear differently to different people. And here the consciousness that has in-breath as its object is one. The consciousness that has out-breath as its object is one, another. And the consciousness that has a sign as its object is another. This you know from Abhidhamma, because consciousness can take only one object at a time. So consciousness that takes the in-breath as an object is one, and then consciousness that takes the out-breath as object is another. So they are different. And the consciousness that has the sign as its object is another. For the meditation subject reaches neither absorption nor even access in one who has not got these three things clear, who does not see clearly the in-breath, the out-breath, and the sign. But it reaches access and also absorption in one who has got these three signs clear. And it is said. Now, when the sign appeared in this way, what must the meditator do? The bhikkhu should go to the teacher and tell him, "Venerable sir, such and such has appeared to me." But, say the Diga reciters, the teacher should say neither this is sign nor this is not sign. After saying, "It happens like this, friend." So the teacher should just say, "It happens like this." He should not say this is a sign or this is not a sign. That is what the Diga reciters think. They should tell him, "Go on giving it attention again and again." For if he were told it is the sign, he might become complacent and stop short at that. That means this sign is difficult to get. And when the teacher said that you have got this sign, he may think, "Oh, I have got what is difficult to get, and so I may slow down a little, and I can practice again anytime I like," something like that. And if he were told it is not a sign, he might get discouraged and give up. So he should encourage him to keep giving it his attention without saying either. So the Diga reciters say, firstly. So Diga reciters mean reciters of the long discourses. You know, there are collections of long discourses and middle-length discourses and then kindred discourses and the gradual sayings. So there are monks who made a special study of the long discourses, and there are others who made a special study of middle-length discourses and so on. So the Diga reciters say like this. But the Majjhima reciters, those who made special study of middle-length sayings, say that he should be told, "This is a sign, friend. Well done. Keep giving attention to it again and again." Because they thought that there is no reason for a meditator to be discouraged or to be complacent when he knows that he has got the sign. Because he practiced meditation just to attain to the jhana stage, and then later on to the attainment of enlightenment. So when the teacher says to him that it is a sign, then he must be encouraged. I mean, he will get encouraged. So it is good, according to the Majjhima reciters, to tell the student that it is the sign.
And that's also Buddha Ghosa's opinion, because it's the second.
That's
opinion.
Right. You remember that? That's very good. So So after that, he should fix his mind on that same sign. And so from now on, his development proceeds by way of fixing. Now we come to the, I think, third or fourth. Fourth stage, fixing. As soon as the sign appears, his hindrances are suppressed, his defilements subside, his mindfulness is established, and his consciousness is concentrated in excess concentration. Then after excess come, jhana concentration. Then he should not give attention to the sign as to its color, or review it as to its specific characteristic. Because if he give attention as to its color, then it would become a color meditation and not breathing meditation. And if you review it as to its characteristic, it will become another kind of meditation and not the breathing meditation, mindfulness of breathing meditation. So he should not pay attention as to its color or its characteristic. He should guard it as carefully as a king's chief queen guards the child and a womb due to become a wheel-turning monarch. That means universal monarch. So he should guard it. Then guarding it thus, he should make it grow and improve with repeated attention. So he should pay attention to it, dwell on it for a long time. And he should practice the tenfold skill in absorption. That takes you back to chapter 4. And bring about evenness of energy. That means evenness of or balance of energy and concentration. As he strives thus, fourfold and fivefold jhana is achieved by him on that same sign in the same way as described under the earth kasina. So jhana arises in him. And then from first jhana he would go to second, third, fourth and fifth jhanas. During the moments of jhana, the mind is very, very fixed. Very, very still and very fixed. And so this is the fourth stage. It is fixing. After fixing comes what? After fixing, observing. Now, what is observing? Observing is insight. It's explained there. So now, he will change to vipassana meditation. Until this point, he practiced breathing meditation as a shamatha meditation, and he gets to jhana stage. So after that, it will become vipassana meditation. So however, when a bhikkhu has achieved the fourfold and fivefold jhana and wants to reach purity by developing the meditation subject through observing and through turning away, he should make that jhana familiar by attaining mastery in it in the five ways. And then embark upon insight by defining mentality, materiality, and how. So, since he has got jhana, he makes the jhana a basis for his vipassana meditation. So he enters into jhana. And then after emerging from the jhana, he concentrates on the jhana. First, he embark upon insight by defining mentality and materiality. That is, defining that this is mind, this is matter. On emerging from the attainment, he sees that the interest and outgress of the physical body and the mind as their origin, because they are caused by mind. And that just as when a blacksmith's bellows are being blown, the wind moves owing to the bag, and to the man's appropriate effort, so too in-breath and out-breath are due to the body and the mind. Now, next, he defines the in-breath and out-breath and the body as materiality, and the consciousness and the states associated with the consciousness as immaterial or mind. You know why it is stated here, why it is given here? Because a real vipassana begins with the discerning of mind and matter clearly. able to see, not just guess, able to see clearly the mind and matter through meditation. First, we need concentration. And after the concentration of mind comes the discerning of mind and matter. So this is the actual beginning of vipassana meditation. So after that, the discerning of mind and matter, or defining of mind and matter, is given in the later chapters. Having defined mentality, materiality in this way, he seeks its condition. Now, from the stage of discerning mentality and materiality, he progresses to the stage of seeing their conditions, or seeing that they are conditioned, seeing their causes. With such he finds it, and so overcomes his doubts about the way of mentality, materiality's occurrence in the three divisions of time. That means the breath and the body are materiality, and mindfulness and others are mentality. And they are not uncaused, or they are not unconditioned. They are conditioned by the breath is conditioned by mind, and the consciousness and mental factors are conditioned by each other, and also conditioned by the material base, and so on. So the next stage is that seeing the conditionality of things, actually seeing the conditions of mind and matter. And then, his doubts being overcome, he attributes the three characteristics, beginning with that of suffering, to mentality and materiality, comprehending them by groups. He abandons the 10 imperfections of insight, beginning with illumination, which arise in the first stages of the contemplation of rise and fall. And he defines as the path the knowledge of the way that is free from these imperfections. This is a description in very brief of the stages of vipassana meditation. And they will be treated in detail in succeeding chapters. So after discerning conditions, he discerns what? Three characteristics: suffering, impermanence, suffering, and insubstantiality. So these three characteristics he come to see. And then he reaches contemplation of dissolution by abandoning attention to arising. Now, at the stage of seeing rising and falling, at the early stage of seeing rising and falling, the impediments come in. The impediments to vipassana, or impediments to progress, that is seeing light or feeling very happy and so on. So when they arise, a yogi may think that he has attained the enlightenment. And if he thinks so, then he will not make effort to reach higher stages. So he must understand that these are not the right, these are not the way to enlightenment, but they are just obstacles. So he has to overcome these obstacles. And when he has overcome these obstacles, he reaches the higher stage of discerning rising and falling. So there are two stages in the discernment of rising and falling. Let us say the lower stage and higher stage. So after reaching the lower stage, the 10 impediments occur in him. And after conquering these 10 impediments, he reaches the higher stage of discerning rise and fall. From there, he reaches another stage where he sees only the falling, only the dissolution or disappearing of things. Only the dissolution of things appear to him clearly. So that is the contemplation of dissolution. He reaches contemplation of dissolution by abandoning attention to arising. When all formations have appeared as terror, owing to the contemplation of their incessant dissolution. So after that, he sees them as dangers. although he is not afraid of them, he does not fear them, but he sees them as dangers. It is different. You are afraid of something. Sometimes you are not afraid of them, but you recognize them as danger. So here also, a yogi does not get afraid of them. If he gets afraid of them, then he has akusala in him, and not meditation. So when he sees things just disappearing, he comes to see that this is danger. There is danger in being disappearing. After that, he becomes dispassionate towards them. When you see something as dangerous, then you are not attached to them. You are not attached to it. You want to get away from it. So he becomes dispassionate towards them. His grief for them fades away and he is liberated from them. Liberated from them means he got rid of attachment, anger and delusion, and becomes enlightened. After he has thus reached the Four Noble Paths in due succession and has become established in the fruition of Arhatship, he at last attains to the 19 kinds of reviewing knowledge. Reviewing knowledge means after attainment of each stage of enlightenment, that is what we call reviewing. Reviewing the path, reviewing the fruit, reviewing Nibbana, reviewing the mental defilements eradicated, and reviewing the mental defilements which remained. So there are 5 kinds of reviewing after the first stage, second stage, and third stage. But after the fourth stage, that is, after becoming an arahant, there are only 4 reviewing, because there are no mental defilements left and eradicated. So in the case of an arahant, there are only 4 reviewings. Reviewing of path, fruit, nibbana, and defilements eradicated. So altogether we have 19 kinds of reviewing knowledge. And he becomes fit to receive the highest gift from the world with its deities. So this is how a person first practices mindfulness on breathing meditation as samatha meditation and gets jhana. And then making that jhana the basis for vipassana meditation, he practices vipassana meditation and gradually reach the stage of arahant. At this point, his development of concentration through mindfulness of breathing, beginning with counting and ending with looking back, is completed. So, in the stages, observing means vipassana, right? And turning away means attainment of path or enlightenment. And looking back means reviewing. So, all the 8. How many stages are there? 8, right. So all stages are complete now. Looking back is completed. This is the commentary on the first tetrad in all aspects. So you remember the first 4 things, the first 4 methods. Long, short, whole breath body, and tranquilizing the breath, right? These 4. Now, since there is no separate method for developing the meditation subject in the case of the other tetrads, their meaning therefore needs only be understood according to the word commentary. So there is no special method for practicing the other sets of 4, because the other sets of 4 are to be practiced after a person reached the jhana stage by practicing the first 4 methods. So there are no no special method for the practice of the other tetrads. Now, in the second tetrad, he trains us, I shall breathe in, I shall breathe out, experiencing happiness or PD. That means clearly seeing or clearly experiencing PD, clearly knowing PD. That is making happiness known, making it plain. Herein, the happiness is experienced in two ways, with the object. That means by way of the object and by way of non-confusion. I think with does not mean by way of, right? It's better to say by way of. So how is the happiness or PD experienced with the object? He attains the two jhanas in which happiness is present. First and second. At the same time, when he has actually entered upon them, the happiness is experienced with the object owing to the object of the jhana, because of the experiencing of the object. Now, when a person attains the first jhana or second jhana, what is the object of that jhana? What is the object of the jhana? The sign, right? The counterpart sign. So, at the moment of jhana, the actual object is counterpart sign and not happiness. But here it is said that he is experiencing, he is knowing the happiness, he is knowing the beauty at that moment. So that means, at the time of reaching the jhana, happiness of PT is said to be known clearly by way of the object. That means because the object is clearly known at that time. So when the object is known, it is said that PT is also known. Not that PT becomes the object of jhana, but by way of the object itself, we can say that PT is also known. And there's a footnote. We'll read from page 309. With the object, that is by way of the object, under the heading of the object, the happiness included in the jhana, that is that object is experienced, because of experience of the object. What is meant? Just as when a man who is looking for a snake discovers its abode, the snake is, as it were, already discovered and caught, owing to the ease with which he will then be able to catch it with charms and spells. He has not yet caught this snake, but it is as good as having caught it. So too, when the object, which is the abode of happiness, is experienced, then the happiness itself is said to be experienced, too, owing to the ease with which it will be apprehended in its specific and general characteristics. Specific characteristic means its characteristic not shared by other mental states. And general characteristics means its impermanence, suffering and no soul nature. So when the object is clearly seen, then PT is said to be also clearly seen. So that is what is meant here. Then, how with non-confusion? When, after entering upon and emerging from one of the two jhanas accompanied by happiness, he comprehends with insight that happiness associated with the jhana is liable to destruction and to fall, then at the actual time of insight, the happiness is experienced with non-confusion or by way of non-confusion owing to the penetration of its characteristics of impermanence and so on. That means when he practices vipassana meditation on it. So first he enters into the first or second jhana, he emerges from it, and then take the happiness, which is one of the jhana factors, as an object of meditation and contemplate on it as impermanent, suffering and soulless. So at that moment he clearly sees he really sees the piti, happiness. And non-confusion means he sees it as it is, as impermanent, as suffering, and as soulless, and not as otherwise. And then there is the quotation of Patisambhita Magga, so we can skip it. Then the next tetrad, the remaining three clauses, or not tetrad, but the clauses. The remaining three clauses should be understood in the same way as to meaning, but there is this difference here. The experiencing of bliss, sukha, must be understood to be through three jhanas. You know, sukha is sukha is present in first jhana, second jhana, and third jhana. So here, through three jhanas, and that of mental formation through four. What is mental formation here? We don't have to ask because it's explained. The mental formation consists of the two aggregates of feeling and perception. So here, mental formation means feeling and perception. So feeling and perception are called mental formation or citta sankhara, because they arise only when consciousness arises. So they depend on consciousness for their arising. So they are said to be conditioned by citta, I mean by consciousness or mind. So mental formation really means mind formed or formed by or conditioned by consciousness. And here, conditioned by consciousness is made to mean feeling and perception. So experiencing the mental formation means experiencing the feeling and perception. So in the case of the clause experiencing bliss, it is said in the Bodhisamhita in order to show the plane of insight here as well. Bliss, there are two kinds of bliss, bodily bliss and mental bliss. Tranquilizing the mental formation means tranquilizing the gross mental formation, stopping it is the meaning. Oh, so experiencing of bliss and tranquilization of mental formation, right? So in the first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, there is sukha, bliss. And so during those jhana, a person is said to experience the bliss. And then tranquilizing the mental formation, tranquilizing the gross mental formation, that means gross feeling and perception, stopping it is the meaning. And this should be understood in detail in the same way as given under the bodily formation. So if you go back. Here, however, in the happiness clause, feeling which is actually being contemplated on in this tridat is stated under the head of happiness, which is a formation. That means, in the text it is said that experiencing of bliss. And experience, here however, in the happiness clause, or PT clause, which is actually being contemplated in the tetrad, is stated under the head of happiness, which is a formation. But in the bliss clause, feeling is stated in its own form. Now the Pali word piti patisamvedi and sukha patisamvedi. So in the word in the clause piti patisamvedi, that is experiencing happiness, feeling is stated under the head of happiness. Although it is said happiness, we should understand it to mean feeling. You know why he is saying this here? Because this second tetrad has to do with contemplation on feeling. So although it is said that experiencing the bliss, I mean experiencing the happiness, the real thing is clearly understanding or clearly knowing the feeling. So the feeling is here described under the heading of happiness. So the real word used is happiness, but what we have to understand is feeling. But in the clause experiencing happiness, it is stated in its old form. That means sukha patisamvedi. Now, sukha, happiness, belongs to a feeling. So here, feeling is stated directly. So we do not have to go around here. So experiencing the bliss means experiencing the feeling. Experiencing happiness means experiencing feeling. Experiencing bliss means experiencing feeling. So here it is stated in its own form, not under the heading of any other thing. So in the two ways, mental formation clause, the feeling is that necessarily associated with perception because of the words perception and feeling belong to the mind. These things being bound up with the mind are mental formations. Now the third clause, tranquilizing the mental formations. Although mental formation means feeling and perception, here it is made to mean feeling accompanied by perception. The same thing actually. Associated with perception, feeling accompanied by or associated with perception. That is why this tetrad has to do with contemplation on feeling. So the commentator is explaining this to us. Because we may ask, in the second clause it is said that he is aware of piti, which is not feeling, but you include it in the feeling contemplation. So he explained, actually the word piti is mentioned, but we must understand feeling, not piti. Yeah, something like that. So the second tetrad has to do with the contemplation on feelings. And this second tetrad can be practiced only after one gets jhanas. And in order to understand this, you have to understand that the first jhana, second jhana, accompanied by what? Piti. And third jhana accompanied by sukha. Fourth jhana also accompanied by sukha, right? And the fifth jhana not accompanied by sukha, it is accompanied by upekkha. So that is why sometimes they say the first two jhanas or three jhanas and so on. So this is the end of the second tetrad. So the third tetrad and so on will finish next week.
So next week, once again, is the last class.
The last class.
So the next class will start off with the four Brahmaviharas or abidings, and that's a wonderful about the social emotions, wonderful meditation, very accessible to us, I think. So, a little pitch, I think, for those of you who need encouragement.